This is Leo for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio, where today that local community scene is connecting up with our national community scene. It's been just over 35 days since Donald Trump was sworn in as the 47th president in the first month of his second administration. We've seen hundreds of sweeping executive orders and wide-ranging actions that have fired or laid off thousands of federal workers, stopped payments to congressionally authorized programs that feed people at home and abroad, that conduct research on diseases and cures, that protect public health, education of our American children, and protect citizens, whether it's in anti-domestic violence programs, law enforcement and Defense Department roles. Many lawsuits have been filed, but the executive branch hasn't slowed down its actions. Trump has empowered a new authority, the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, which seems to be led by the richest man on earth, carrying out cost-cutting on a massive scale with little or no factual cost-benefit analysis. All the while, Congress seems slow to react, to respond. As Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut put it, the rule of law is disintegrating, and a lot of people still don't know what the actual Trump agenda is. It may take a while before every American feels the impact in their daily lives, but locally, some folks are ready to call out their local representatives over what they see as a crisis that calls on all of them to take a stand. And today I've got Brian Vroman on the phone to discuss the efforts of citizens in our area to call out Congressman Pete Stauber on his response to the unprecedented actions of Donald Trump's administration, and Elon Musk in particular. And there have been a couple of demonstrations at Congressman Stauber's office in Hermantown the past few weeks. And on Sunday, February 23rd, 400 people carried signs and spoke out about their concerns to this congressman who has not criticized his party's leadership's policies and their effects. So greetings. Welcome to Community Radio, Brian Vroman.
Thank you. Good to be here, Leo.
I think that, you know, you probably don't want to take all the credit, but you were instrumental in helping get the Itasca Indivisible group to organize the rally this past Sunday. Can you share a little bit with us about both your background and the background of Itasca Indivisible and Indivisible in general?
Sure. So I'm from Grand Rapids. I've lived here most of my life. I went away to serve in the Army for a while, and I went away to college. Other than that, I've lived here and I work here in Grand Rapids at the local community college. And I've been a member of Indivisible since 2017. And Itasca Area Indivisible, the current organization in the local area, started in 2020. And I've been on the leadership team of that organization. And our national people basically said they put the word out that Congress is on recess until the 28th of February. And so they said this is a good time to go talk to your congressman at their home offices. And so we called Stauber many times. We called the Hermantown office. We called the DC office. We got the name of the staffer who schedules meetings for him. And I tried to call her twice, and both times she was not available. And so another staffer gave me her email, and I said, well, is she good about answering her email? And he said, yeah, she answers it right away. So I sent her an email and no response from her on that either. And, you know, the main thing is, it's one thing to disagree on issues, but, you know, we're reasonable people, and, you know, we can understand people having different perspectives on issues, but we really think that our representative should sit down and talk with us and at least listen to where our concerns are. But Mr. Stauber has refused repeatedly to do that. And so that's why we had the rally. And we contacted other Indivisible organizations. I think altogether there were 8 Indivisible organizations involved. And there were a lot of people that were from outside of Indivisible as well. And as you said, we had people counting, and it was impossible to get a precise count. But there were, at the peak, there were over 400 people there from Duluth, from Mora, from Ely, from Grand Rapids, from Bemidji, and various other locations around northern Minnesota.
Indeed. I encountered a couple of people from up the shore and from Two Harbors as well. And
sure,
the action has gotten a lot of people's attention, even those that are still making up their mind about what's happening. Because if you haven't been paying attention carefully for the last month, there's an awful lot to unpack. Brian, could you share with us a bit about the moment we're in, how you understand what the issues are, that at least what concerns you the most? I mean, you are an instructor of history at a community college. You teach about ethics, and I think you had a class entitled War and Propaganda at some point. So you might have some ideas about why it might be a critical time for citizen action.
Yeah, there are lots of things that I could say about this. When Trump was elected the first time, I was very worried because I don't throw the F word fascist around lightly, but I have studied the rise of the Nazi movement in Germany and to a lesser extent other fascist movements. And I just saw some common characteristics right off the bat. And there are certain things that are associated with a fascist movement. There's usually a leader cult. The leader is the source of truth, and the leader tends to make war on other potential arbiters of truth, whether it's the media or science or universities or what have you. There's a desire to return to a mythic golden age of the past. There's almost always scapegoating of some minority, whether it's an ethnic minority or a religious minority or whatever. And all of those factors were present. And now fast forward to the current Trump administration, some other things that are going on. You can't have an effective democracy. You can't have a working democracy at all without rule of law and without checks and balances. And what I see happening with Musk is that essentially what he's doing is called impoundment. And there was a case during the Nixon administration about impoundment. And basically, Congress has the purse strings and Congress allocates money. And what the court ruled in the Nixon era was that the administration can't impound money that's been allocated by Congress. In other words, once Congress allocates it, the administration has to spend it. And so what's going on here, though, it appears that DOGE, headed by Elon Musk, who has not been elected to anything, who has not been vetted or confirmed by the Senate as the official head of any government agency, is making arbitrary decisions about what money gets spent and what doesn't. And he has no constitutional authority to do so. So that's another major concern we have. And we see cronyism. We see people who are not only unqualified, but who are, frankly, scary, being put in charge of FBI. You have Kash Patel, Tulsi Gabbard in charge of national intelligence, and Pete Hegseth in charge of defense in the Pentagon, and on we could go. And these are all frightening things. The other sorts of issues that concern us are mostly economic in nature. Well, not only economic, but for example, the House GOP, you know, the Republicans, have proposed cuts to Medicaid in the area of $880 billion over 10 years. And that would just about zero out the Medicaid budget. Well, we live in rural northern Minnesota, people in Two Harbors, people in Grand Rapids, and Medicaid is very important up here. Without Medicaid, rural hospitals are going to have to cut back on services and rely more and more on emergency services, assisted living places. Many of them will go under. A lot of people are on Medicaid, and they're being cared for in their homes, but they get waivers from Medicaid, and those could go away. Local jails, when people are incarcerated in local jails, during the time that they're in jail, their health care needs are paid for by Medicaid. If that goes away, then local taxpayers have to foot the bill. So Medicaid cuts, if they go through, are going to be absolutely devastating. It's a train wreck waiting to happen. And so that was another one of our major concerns. We have foreign policy concerns. I'm a veteran. I served in the United States Army during the Cold War. And we see now at the recent UN General Assembly vote, the United States voted with Russia and North Korea against Ukraine and against our traditional allies like Britain and France and so forth in Canada. This is all really, really troubling stuff. We haven't had another general war, a world war, since 1945. And the reason we haven't, the reason the world has been relatively stable, is because of international organizations like NATO, the United Nations, and so on. And it wasn't easy to put all that stuff together. And once it's gone, you know, all bets are off. Who knows what's going to happen? The world stability is at risk right now. So there are a lot of reasons, a lot of concerns that we have. And we wanted to talk to our representative about these concerns. But again, he appears to be not interested in having that conversation.
Brian, you alluded to the fact that Congress had been on a recess, but I was quickly scanning some news today and heard that a vote could be imminent in the House of Representatives to pass a budget that would codify both over $4 trillion of tax cuts and massive spending cuts. So two kinds of cuts, tax cuts for billionaires, and obviously Elon Musk is primary in that class, and taking away of funds for things just like, as you said, Medicaid, never mind foreign aid, but the basics for what middle and lower income earners in the U.S. depend on and won't know that they're gone until they're gone. It was interesting to me that it was the rally on Sunday focused on the Musk or us phrase, and is what Musk is doing by going through this impoundment, in your opinion, kind of like the dress rehearsal for draconian cuts to all kinds of social welfare programs in the United States as part of trying not to let the deficit, I mean, the deficit is already going to balloon with the proposal as is. It's going to add trillions to our deficit, but they want to mitigate that by making drastic cuts. Is that what Elon Musk is essentially, is preparing us for what that's going to look like?
Well, I think that's part of it. By the way, I might have had the date on when the recess ended slightly wrong, but anyway,
okay.
Be that as it may, I think part of it is that. So the proposal, as I understand it, is for something like $4.5 trillion in tax cuts, mostly for the wealthy. And yeah, cuts to Medicaid, it wouldn't make up for all of it. So it would balloon the deficit, as you said. It would, you know, maybe mitigate some of it. But I don't think that's the only thing that's going on either, because some of the things that Musk is getting rid of are in areas where his companies have government contracts. So, for example, if NASA is downsized and some of its mission is restricted and then given to SpaceX, that's a conflict of interest. And we see that sort of thing happening with Elon Musk. So part of it is, yeah, they want this huge tax cut for the very wealthy, over $4 trillion, and they're going to, you know, try to mitigate some of that, as you said, through cuts that would hurt working class Americans. But I also think there's a lot of corruption going on there, too. A lot of the figures that Doge has been disseminating have turned out to not be true. There's been a lot of untruth and exaggeration there. But I think we really need to watch for conflict of interest. I think, you know, he gets a lot of his money through government contracts. And I think if he can eliminate direct government spending and replace it by a private contract with one of his companies, well, that's the very definition of corruption.
Maybe crony capitalism could creep in here, but it would seem like a person who has this much vested interest in what the government doles out should not be in this position of making any decision on cutting spending.
Right. It's a clear conflict of interest.
We're speaking today with Brian Vroman with Itasca Indivisible, talking about the rally held in front of Representative Stauber's office over the weekend, talking about everything that is hitting us all at once in the first 35 days of the Trump administration. Brian, if you can you maybe address yourself directly to the concerns of Trump voters in our area, folks who are middle class who vote or lower middle class who voted primarily on their economic concerns, you know, coping with the effects of wealth disparity, the flat wages that American workers have gotten over the last four decades, and the rising prices that they face. Can you help them understand how this is going to be affecting them?
Well, I think it's important to understand that, number one, the direct cuts to Medicaid, virtually everybody knows somebody who is on Medicaid, whether it's their mother or their grandma or somebody with a special needs child or whatever, and those people will be directly impacted. But the other thing that is important to keep in mind, what happens at the federal level and at the state level has a very direct impact on what happens at the county and the municipal level. So, for example, at the state level, if local government aid is cut to finance a tax cut, well, then your property taxes go up. Well, with Medicaid cuts impacting jails, as I described a minute ago, the same thing is going to happen, the same dynamic. You've got those people in the jails, and they have health care needs. And right now, as I said, they're paid for by Medicaid. But if you take Medicaid away, somebody's got to pay for those health care needs. And who's it going to be? It's going to be county governments and municipal governments, and maybe in some cases, but mostly county governments that have to pay that cost. And in order to do that, they're going to raise property taxes.
Yeah.
So it's not going to help the average person in northern Minnesota. We are very, I don't want to say dependent, but I guess it kind of is dependent. Our economy is heavily subsidized. In this. I don't like those words because those words can be twisted in a negative way.
It sure can.
But we do get a lot of Medicaid money and Medicare and Social Security. We have an aging population. We have demographically in northern Minnesota, we're older than much of the rest of the country. And so we have a lot of recipients who receive these benefits. And if they go away or are dramatically reduced, it's going to really hurt. And there's a trickle-down effect. You know, for example, in some smaller communities, maybe there's a hospital, and maybe without Medicaid payments, maybe they can't keep their doors open. Well, maybe they're the biggest employer in that community, but all the medical staff and employees move away. Well, now you can't keep the school open. You know, so it has a trickle-down effect that way. It all is linked together.
Indeed. I did note that there was even an initiative to cut tax breaks for nonprofit hospitals looming in the budget bill. So I see what I see where you're headed with this. Having been on a school board, I know that there's only so much money circulating locally that you can draw from taxpayers to support. What draws more money from the local scene may make less money available for very important investments like our education system.
Right. And then what you have essentially is a shrinking pie, and you have needs. Schools have needs. Hospitals have needs. Law enforcement departments have needs, and so on and so forth. And then they have to fight for that money. And we all want, you know, good police protection and police service. We all want good schools for our children. We all want good medical service, fire service, so on and so forth. But it's got to be paid for somehow. And we've been getting a lot of money from, you know, the federal and the state levels. And if that goes away, then, you know, then we're holding the bag.
Brian Vroman, I'm up against the clock a little bit, but I want to get your response to where you think the next developments in the administration's unilateral actions that you might be most concerned about. What do you think is the way for the society to respond? We actually have people who are on the Democratic side who want to see more damage done to the country as a way to hopefully raise their prospects. But can we as individuals or as a collective of just citizens effectively respond? Or is the ballot box really the effective remedy for what you're seeing right now?
Well, we're moving into uncharted territory. We've never been here as a nation before. And there are various scenarios that could play out. I think the thing to really watch is this. As the courts are doing their job, and as they're attempting to rein in some of the oversteps of the administration, will the administration honor those court orders? If they don't, then that's a red line, and then we're going to have to take to the streets, because that's a direct threat to checks and balances, rule of law, and democracy itself. Then we really will have, as somebody put it, a rogue president. If he doesn't respect the rule of law, if he doesn't respect the courts, then where are we at? That's authoritarianism. That's an end to democracy. And the only thing that'll stop it at that point is a mass. Now, I'm a peaceful person. I'm not talking about violence, but a mass peaceful rising of the people to say, no, you're not going to do that. We're going to protect our democracy. You know, so I'm a veteran. I was lucky that I never had to serve in combat. But how many, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans over the centuries have fought and bled and died to defend democracy and freedom? And we can't just say we're going to let it go. And for what? You know, for what purpose? What is so important that it's worth giving up our democracy? Like I said earlier, we can disagree on how much to spend on defense or on whatever program, on infrastructure. We can have those disagreements, and we should be able to sit down at the table and work it out. But when it comes to, are we going to have rule of law and democracy, that's not negotiable.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian. You've given us so much to think about today. And I wanted to point out to listeners that I've learned that community members in Two Harbors have scheduled the first meeting of what they're calling the Breakwall Indivisible Group out of Two Harbors, scheduled for this Sunday, March 2nd, 2 to 3 p.m. at our Two Harbors Community Center. Brian, I'm wondering if you have any parting thoughts about the next phase of this, as you said, unprecedented national journey. I think you did a great job of telling us what our choices are. Anything that you'd add to encourage folks to stay engaged?
Well, first of all, don't give up. Don't listen to naysayers. We can get through this and come out on the other side. Right now, it's important to call Pete Stauber, call Amy Klobuchar, and call Tina Smith, and keep calling. Call every day. And, you know, everybody needs a mental health right now and then, but in general, we need to stay plugged in and engaged and following what's going on, and we need to be ready to act. And at some point, I hope it doesn't get to this point, but if it gets to the point, you know, if Trump does ignore court orders and so forth, I don't know what's going to come next. Is it going to be civil disobedience? I don't know. That'll be a gut check moment for everybody, I guess. But hopefully it doesn't get to that point. But, you know, start networking, start organizing, have calling parties where you get together and maybe, you know, eat some cookies or something and take turns calling Pete Stauber. You can make it fun. You can make it a social event and still save democracy at the same time.
Great perspective. I appreciate that much, Ryan, and thanks for joining us today. And I wish you the best, all of us the best going forward. And we have to make it work for all of us. So let's all, as you said, stay engaged.
Thank you. Thank you, Leo.
Thank you so much, Brian Vroman with Itasca Indivisible. Appreciate you joining me today on KTWH. Thanks. Bye now.
Thanks. Bye.
This is Leo for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio with a Lake View.